All right. Welcome back, everyone, for another episode of the Nova Files. As always, I'm here, Peter from Medallion Comics with
Ian Miller from Trouble with Rick Comics.
And we're here to talk about just the regular dorky shit that we've been watching, getting into, reading, all the fun stuff you love hearing us drone on about.
Absolutely.
So, hey, man, what's been up with you? Yeah, it's been a while since we talked.
I've been very busy. I've been finishing up Codename Hunter issue 3.
Nice.
It's actually on the platform very soon, on the Sierra Nova Comics platform, so very excited about that. And I got a convention next week, so I'm going to unload or reveal issue 3 to the world.
Well, where's the convention? Where are you setting up?
It's called EternalCon in Long Island, New York. It's actually in one of the universities, at Hofstra University.
Oh, nice. So it's like more or less a pretty small event. So, like, you know, if people want to go, they're not going to be, you know, over and bombarded by too many people.
Yeah, it's one of the smaller conventions. I usually like those type because I kind of thrive in them.
No, I hear you. Like, I'm every time I've gone to one of like those mini Comic Cons that they've done, like here in like my area, they have like one thing I love in my area. Like usually December, they do a free mini Comic Con. It's just for vendors and artists. So it's like, you know, it's free to go in and like, you know, the tables are cheaper too. So yeah, I know it's like you don't have too many people, but you have enough where it's like, hey, cool, we're here to check out this stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's always I find that's always the best time for indies too, because, you know, sometimes with the bigger cons, like you can get a little overshadowed.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh man, but I wish you luck. I hope you do well. So I'm curious, how do you set up your table? Do you just sell your comic? Do you sell like prints and other stuff? Like this is like, you know, so because, you know, we talk a lot of indie stuff. So I'd love to hear from other indies. Like, how do you set up your table? What do? What do you sell? What do you make? How do you promote?
Well, first of all, I do sell not just my books. I also sell prints, T-shirts. In fact, I'm wearing one right now. Yeah, so I do stuff like that. But the way to promote, I do use social media, and I do recommend this for creators that are just starting out. Promote a lot on social media, and also word of mouth. That also helps a lot.
So when you sell prints, do you sell just prints from your comic, or do you make like other prints of like well-known characters to try to attract the general audience?
Well, I mostly just sell prints from my universe, but I am considering branching out to do other prints of other characters just to attract more people at the table.
Oh yeah, definitely. I have like a friend here locally who has a webcomic called not a webcomic. He has a comic he's made called Blythe. It's pretty good. Usually when he sets up his table, he's promoting the shit ton out of his book, but you should see his table. It's like mostly art, like pretty good art of like all different franchises. You got a lot of the Pretty Ladies, you got some Transformers, you got a little bit of everything.
Okay.
Oh, by the way, don't mind me. I have a bit of a cough. I was sick with fever a few weeks ago, and I'm still like in recovery.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Oh, don't worry about it. The worst of it is over.
Good, good.
So speaking of cough, and I'm pretty sure you've been on the other end of this. For people who are unaware, we've been having a serious fire problem up here in Canada.
Yeah.
So what's going on? It's kind of funny because I'm in Montreal and you're in New York. So up here, we've been having a lot of fires in northern Quebec. So all that smoke is traveling downward. So we get hit by it, but I think you guys got hit by it the hardest.
We did. There was a couple of days where it just was smoky and it looked very apocalyptic. It looked like, did you see Blade Runner 2049? Remember the scene where he's going to Las Vegas?
Yeah.
It was kind of like that kind of misty orange, you know, type of deal. I was like, oh my God, it's like the end of the world out there.
I know. It was like, I'm sorry. It was like, I just loved all the memes that came out of it. Especially all those like Team Force Drive memes. It's like, we're under attack by Canada. It's time to invade Canada. They've unleashed chemical warfare. No, but Same thing, because like I have my bad cough, so I actually wasn't even going out for a day or two here. It wasn't anywhere near as bad, but like there were a few days you went outside and it constantly smelled like you were near a campfire.
Yeah, that's what I got. I definitely got the smell of campfire. I was like, is somebody barbecuing out there? But then I see the news. I was like, oh God.
Yeah, well, it's all the forest fires. We have to actually get people from France to come over here and help us out because the local firefighters were just couldn't handle it all.
Yeah, it is crazy, and I was actually worried about you. In
Well,
fact,
up here in the city, we were all 100% perfectly fine. It was all up north. It's in the forest areas. Yeah, it's just like all that stuff just came trickling down. Like it didn't hit us too hard because I don't fucking know science, man. I'm not gonna bullshit comic book gamma ray science this shit, but like it just kind of like it hit us, but it seemed to really congregate in New York.
okay, yeah, it did.
Yeah, although I will say this, so it's like I one of my favorite memes I saw coming out of all this was the it's like, why would you pay so much money to fly to New York right now? Photo shoot apocalyptic photo shoots in New York. Pretend you're in Blade Runner. Oh, but yeah, no, that was just funny. But anyway, yeah, so like I'm hoping next year, even on my end, like starting to really hit the con circuit, because on my end, issue 4 of my book is finally out. So fucking happy. All of them are for sale on Amazon. Issues 1 and 2 are free to read on Sciernova. You could also buy 3 and 4 on Sciernova. And right now we're actually working on making a collection, which will also include some extra content for people who really want to invest. So by this time next year, I'll have like a good physical product and start working on some like little some bookmarks, some pins. I got some like chibi art that I'm gonna include in there, so that's gonna be fun. And I'm also gonna reach out to the guys on the platform, and like I was telling you earlier, it's like and I'll probably send you copies of my book too when you start to going to cons in the future. It's like that way we could all promote each other. So it's like, hey, I'll send you like a few issues of my book. And if people from the platform send me a few issues of book, even if it's like 3 or 4 different books, it makes our tables look far more vast.
I agree.
And yeah, and we work together, we promote each other. That's the whole point of the platform, right? And like, maybe we can find our audiences in the place we didn't expect. Like maybe my books and stuff won't do well here locally, or vice versa. But maybe if like we send them over to Greg or some other people, maybe they'll do gangbusters in their local area, or they'll do super well in your area.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a global market, and comics are man, comics are just in the weirdest place market wise.
I know. It's unbelievable.
I think it's a mix of things. Like we've talked about this before, but I find comics like why some people consider it a dying medium. It takes a lot to make a good comic. Like we've established it, it takes a lot of art. And when you compare it to stuff like manga, manga is all like black and white. They don't have to color. It's usually like they can get away with putting out like something a month. It's less work to be put in, so it's easier to crank out. But the other problem is, I think why it's a dying medium, like we've touched on this, is that comics are just not allowed to progress or end. So when you have people like Marvel and DC who are just pumping up the same over and over again, like I don't know if you're following any like local any of the local current runs on anything. But man, is Spider-Man getting a lot of hate.
I've like I said, I have to be honest, folks. I haven't bought a Spider-Man comic in a very long time since the controversial One More Day storyline.
Oh yeah, fuck that.
6.
And
So I have followed what has been happening with Spidey in his current line, and yeah, I understand the hate.
yeah, it's the amazing cucked man. Oh my God. It's just like I don't know what it is with Marvel. It's like, no, we can't age Spider-Man. He needs to appeal to children. That's why you made Miles. Just let Peter have something, for God's sakes.
Yeah, Peter can age. Peter should age because he can't stay young forever.
You know what I think currently is the best version of Peter Parker that's existing in media right now? The one from Across the Spider-Verse.
Yes, yes, because he is aged, he's gotten married, he has a kid, Mayday, she's so adorable.
We got to talk about that movie. No, it's not just that, but it's like this is a Spider-Man who went through all the horrible shit. Like, you
Yeah.
know, like the Spider-Man from Miles's universe was pretty much like the Spider-Man, but if all he did was win, win, win. And the Spider-Man from that reality, Peter B. Parker, is what I like to call the comic Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Where all he does is suffer, suffer, suffer. And you know, it's like we'll talk about the movies in a bit, but the joke was that the reason why he got back together with MJ and wanted to have a daughter in the end was because he spent time with Miles and he realized that this whole mentorship thing and taking care of a kid and seeing how awesome Miles was is like, you know what, maybe it's not so scary being a dad.
Yeah.
So essentially, that means Mayday's an anomaly, but we'll get to that later. And so it's like, you know, this is a Spider-Man who learned an important lesson in that, you know, maybe this isn't so scary. And like, I would love to see like a run with that kind of a Spider-Man.
I do too, because I think from what I've seen with the reaction of that particular Spidey. You know, the fans are just loving that version because they're like, okay, this is a Spider-Man that has progressed. Like you said, he's gone through so many trials. He is constantly lost, but he's also gained this family and he's finally aging. I mean, for God's sakes, he's got dead sideburns.
And it's not just that, but like all the people who grew up on Spider-Man, they're around that stage in life.
Yeah.
You know, they're having kids, they're getting out there, they're like realizing how difficult life is. Yeah, it's like, but we got to keep Spider-Man relatable. Oh, by the way, we made Spider-Man a multi-billionaire.
That I thought was the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
It's like, what? And the other thing about comics is like, whenever you see that shit, you know it's not gonna last. I keep telling you, man, I'm waiting for the meteor to hit Krakoa. I'm just like, I'm seeing all these X-Men, and I'm like, there's some writer who's gonna join the team and is gonna be like, these mutants have had it too good for too long.
Yeah.
Oh my God, no, I got the perfect fucking clip for this. One moment. Did you ever watch Fairly Odd Parents?
Yes, I did.
Okay. There's just one line from the legendary Norm Macdonald, and it's just perfect. Let me just play it.
Well, I wish to destroy Canada. They've had it too good for too long.
Did you hear that?
Yes, I heard it.
So that's how I feel about Krakoa. Well, I'm offered to destroy Krakoa. They've had it too good for too long.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what's going on with the Marvel storylines, especially with Spidey and the X-Men, but what's going on at DC is even just as worse.
Oh, do tell.
Once again with the Batman line, and I can't believe I'm saying this. They're teasing a Batman Catwoman war.
What?
I know. I'm like, really, we have to do this? I mean, I have to say the best run from that series, and even if it was slightly controversial, was the Tom King run, and that was a couple of years ago. Ever since then, it went downhill. I mean, they went through a storyline where Bruce was in another universe, and he went through the multiverse meeting all these Batman, like the Michael Keaton Batman, the Adam West Batman, Frank Miller Batman. I'm like, yeah, this is cool, but this is pretty much doesn't make sense in the scheme of things. I'm like, this is like Justice League type of situation, not Batman.
See, that's always the inherent problem of like the shared universes like that, in that there's this guy I've been listening to on YouTube recently, who's been talking about a lot of the Spider-Man comics, which is how I heard about the Zeb Wells run. And the main topic was that magic does not belong in the Spider-Man universe. But then they're like, oh, but look at the last No Way Home, was it, right? And what he says, like, yes, it works there because it teaches Peter Parker the lesson that magic is not the answer to your problems.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I agree. It's like Spider-Man as a character and what he's rooted in, it's more about the sci-fi and more about science and more about street-level stuff.
Yeah.
So when Spider-Man has to start dealing with magicians and a fucking devil, it makes no sense. It's so, like, out of left field. And look, I'm gonna say this. I will literally eat my words if at one point this whole thing with Mephisto culminates with it literally being a tactic to prevent Mady from coming into existence because she's gonna defeat him, only for that to happen anyways. Like, if that fucking happens, that would make me feel good because I love that character so much.
Actually, that's actually a very good story idea.
Yeah.
Listening, Marvel, why don't you hire Peter?
Yeah, but actually, that's something they legitimately teased in the last run. Like, yeah. I think I may have mentioned it to you. Yeah, so like when Strange asked why does Mephisto enjoy fucking with Peter Parker above all else, is because in the future he has a vision where Peter Parker's daughter is the one who defeats him after he conquers the world.
Yeah, I would get ready for that storyline now as opposed to, you know, dragging out this current storyline because it sucks.
Oh yeah, but you know, you want strong female characters. Who the fuck is better than Mayday Parker of all people?
Exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, no, like, if we ever get that storyline, I will pick it up. I'm not going to lie. All right. I'm the guy who went out of my way to find the Spider-Verse issues that featured Mayday and buy copies just to show, like, she still has a fan base.
Yeah.
I literally got a 1 month Marvel Unlimited membership because they made a story about an MC2 story with her and her little brother.
Oh.
Yeah, and also MC2 Peter Parker's alive again, so that's good.
Yeah,
like, although I'll just to add to that, the fucking disrespect that they did was like, what was it, Spider-Geddon, end of Spider-Verse?
Yes.
Oh my, there's so many characters that they have no time to finish what they want to do, where they have to just add like dialogues in the group shots. And I'm like, okay, no, I'm sorry. Peter Parker becoming the other was a fascinating ending from the last event. And now it's just more of an Easter egg. I'm like, what the fuck are you guys doing? But, you know, let's transition over to some good Spider-Man stuff.
Yes, yes, yes.
So you saw Across the Spider-Verse, right?
I did. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I was on the edge of my seat the whole time.
So you were on the edge of the Spider-Verse.
Which is actually, ironically, the next title of the next sequel.
I thought the next one was Beyond the Spider-Verse.
No, you're right. It was Beyond the Spider-Verse. I'm sorry. That should have been the... That's your for the title.
Yeah. I'd love to hear your thoughts, man. You go first.
I love the character of Miles. I do. He's such a good kid, wants to do the right thing, but also wants to be, you know, still a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, where he is in this film is he's obviously been on the road as Spider-Man for a while, but he still wants to be
here, yeah.
he still wants to be his own man, you know. Of course, his parents, particularly his father, you know, just hopes he doesn't grow up too fast, so he's not in his life so much, which is understandable and relatable, especially if you're at that age.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, when Gwen comes, Spider-Gwen, everything changes.
I mean, when a girl like that shows up in your room, everything fucking changes.
I know. But, yeah, it turns into a turn of events that just immediately leaps off the page and onto the screen. The villain, the Spot, my God, it's such a good version of this character.
I know the Spot, I feel, power-wise, the Spot is so goddamn OP if used right. I was actually watching a video about this that broke down the Spot's appearances in the comics. He's one of the, in his earliest appearances, he was a legitimate threat to Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Because he could overwhelm his spider sense because, like, all these fucking portals, like, they're all fucking dangerous. It's hard to react to it. But then they kind of just turned him into a joke villain because, quite frankly, someone like Spot is kind of broken. So if you start taking him seriously, he is an incredible threat, which is what happened in Across the Spider-Verse.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And of course, the Spider-Man from the different universes, the Spider Society, as you will, they do consider him as a threat, but they also consider other things as a threat.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's more of a, he is a threat, but in the sense that he's become a threat because he's cross, he's multidimensional now.
Yeah.
But I think there is a, you watched the 90s Spider-Man cartoon, right?
Yes, I did. I actually loved that version of the Spot, you know, because that was how I got introduced to the character.
Exactly.
I was like, this guy can be dangerous if, you know, he uses the power even further. And later in the episode, you do find out he left one of his portals open. And you're like, okay, that's serious.
Mm-hmm. But the fact is, like, how powerful he was, in the sense, like, he just makes tiny portals everywhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's actually a character in my comics who has a similar ability, but the portals are so small, matter can't transfer through. It's just energy that can transfer through.
Yeah.
But it is an incredibly powerful ability. But the problem is, a lot of times characters like that in comics will be introduced as one-off villains. But when you stop and think about how their power could actually be used, if somebody competent has those powers, they're an incredible threat. So what ends up happening? Well, you know, this is just meant to be a one-off, a villain of the week. We can't have them be competent. We have to turn them into jokes.
Yeah.
But, and there's another thing I'll say, speaking about the Spider Society, there is something fundamentally incredibly entertaining watching multiple spider people work together.
Yes. I would say so, because you have so many egos or, you know, ideas clashing with each other.
Oh, no, it's not even that. I mean, like, visually. Like, when you watch them web-slinging and doing their thing, specifically, you remember that scene where the Alchemex building is, like, crumbling down? Then you got the four spiders doing everything they can, web-slinging around, doing... There's... It's, like, my most real-world equivalent to this is like watching trapeze artists or watching Cirque du Soleil.
That's right, because they're in sync.
Yeah, they're so incredibly in sync, but also, like, their move, like, watching Spider-Man do his thing is always entertaining, like, when he's agile. But watching four individuals with the same power set on the same mission and working together, I get why Marvel has been doing these spider teams for so long. There's something to be said about these, this power set as a team is incredibly enjoyable to look at.
I agree.
Yeah. It's like, you know, like the Power Rangers, for example, you know, they all have the similar power sets. They have color coordination and the way they work. It's very fun to watch, but something about, like, the spider teams with the web slinging, the crawling, the agility of it, and how they function is just so fucking fun to look at.
It is. It really is.
But yeah, like, Honestly, I think Across the Spider-Verse is one of the best movies I've seen in a very long time.
I agree 100% with that. And I would not be surprised if it got another nomination for an Academy Award.
Art style alone, man, that thing was top notch.
They upped their game. Because I rewatched Into the Spider-Verse, I was like, wow, they made some changes to the artwork. It's spectacular.
Did you hear there's actually different versions of the movie out there?
Yes, I did. I'm now curious about those other versions.
Yeah. Essentially, what it is, there are just a few scenes where there's different takes.
Oh.
So, for example, I'll give you a quick example. Hold up. Yeah. Fuck you, Zoom. There is a scene where, where Lila's kind of teasing Miguel. And essentially, what it is, at the end of it, she offers him a fist bump. But some people have said in their version of the film, they didn't see that. Instead, they saw her taking a selfie with him together.
I wonder why that is.
Well, from what the director said, it's like, well, this is a multiversal movie, remember? So we thought it was appropriate that we would release different versions of it, so everyone has like their own variation of it.
Oh, God.
But it's small stuff like that, like a change in lines, or like it's always the same thing that happens, but just like a slight variation on it.
Yeah, fair enough.
So it's not like you're seeing like a completely different movie, just like the gag is just maybe sw swapped around a bit.
Okay. If.
But going back to this is like, speaking of Miles, when Miles first showed up in the Ultimate Run, I was not a fan of him. I found him a little boring and redundant, but also I was a huge, huge fan of Ultimate Peter Parker. Like, I thought that was a character done right, and I didn't enjoy how they ended his story. And I felt like it was a difference because they killed them off to introduce a new character, and I just hated that. It just felt so disrespectful. It's like, oh, but we're giving the character, it's a 16-year-old kid. Like, it felt wrong to me. So I never like immediately connect with Miles because of that. And I found a lot of his plots compared to some of the plots that were coming out in the Ultimate books to be a little dull at the time.
Yeah.
Now, this version of Miles, where he becomes Spider-Man after the like established Spider-Man in his universe dies, and it wasn't a little kid version of him, it was like a full-on adult. And then he gets trained by other spider people who are like, you know what? I like that Miles. The Miles we have from the movie, he makes total sense to me. Like, he had his Uncle Ben moment. He had his regret for not acting because he's like, I had power, but I couldn't help the original Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And he feels responsible for what happened to him. And, and then, like, the universe helped out and brought in other spider people to help him, to train him, to get him ready. And, like, I like that. I like this version of Miles. He works because, one, we weren't already connected to this version of Peter Parker, so there's no like animosity with him being leaving. And then we meet other versions of him, and that helps us transfer over, you know what I mean? And that comes back to the other problem with Miles in the comics as it is. Miles doesn't work that well when there's already a Spider-Man in that universe.
Yeah, I could agree with that. I think they haven't. I'm not sure if they have still, because again, I haven't bought a Spider-Man comic in since 2006, especially from the Miles line. But from what I've heard, they haven't quite figured out how to make that work. You know, saying,
Yeah.
okay, you got the main Spider-Man, but you also have this Spider-Man that's pretty much, handling lower stuff. So they haven't quite figured out how to make that work. They did make it work in the video game version, and I played it. It's spectacular. It's It mostly has Peter, going off to do his own thing with MJ from another country. So Miles is pretty much left in charge of protecting the city.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I really need to play those Spider-Man games, man. I'm telling you, but they're only on PlayStation, and I'm like, how do I put this? It's difficult. I bought an Xbox One, and I barely play it as it is now. It's difficult to justify buying a PlayStation just for one fucking game.
I understand. I'm hesitant about buying PS5 price wise.
Yeah. But
And
isn't
also,
Spider-Man only on PS5?
no, Spider-Man Miles is actually at PS4. And, but as you said, I have to justify buying a new system when I have so many other systems that
Yeah.
I still play with.
I gotta see if I can find a friend who would loan me his PS5 for like a week just so I could blast through these games. Oh man. But yeah, that makes sense. Like you can have like what should be done is like, you know what? Graduate Spider-Man. Have a Mary Jane, they go off into the sunset with their kid, and he becomes Spider-Man for another place, because he's like, you know what, I'm gonna move out of the city, take care of raising my family, take care of raising my daughter, but I can still do the Spider-Man thing elsewhere. Or, you know what would be a fucking ideal thing to do? This will never goddamn happen. It'll never fucking happen. But Peter Parker should retire and become the guy in the chair for Miles.
It sounds like a good idea, but they're not gonna do it.
Oh, 100%. Like I kind of liked the dynamic of Peter B. Parker and Miles in the Spider-Verse movie where like, he's kind of grizzled, he's got a family, so he's looking out for the kid. He's doing his own thing, but like he's more focused on the family side. It's like, you know what? I'll teach you how to make web shooters. It's like, oh, I fought guys like this in the past. Let me give you some pointers. So it makes sense that he's like his teacher, his mentor, and would help out every now and then, but like he's got other responsibilities now.
Exactly.
And sometimes, this will never fucking happen. It'll never fucking happen. But sometimes it's the most responsible thing to do is to know when to pass on the mantle.
I know. I know.
Okay. So, Spider-Verse. I just love so much about this movie. I love the concept. I love how they're basically what it looks like to me, all like these obvious. Okay, before anything, spoiler alerts for anyone who cares or anyone who hasn't seen it. It does seem like they're starting to double down on the whole incursion stuff.
Yeah.
So it looks like we're playing into some other stuff from the greater MCU here, which is perfectly fine. I think it's like a legitimate thing to do. But these canon events. We need to discuss this.
All
So,
right.
what was your thoughts on the whole canon event stuff?
Well, it was interesting seeing, the different canon events, especially where pretty much every other Peter was meant to lose someone, whether it's Uncle Ben or Aunt May, like in the MCU version. But it's pretty much the same thing. And of course, Miguel, Spider-Man 2099, who was a badass, by the way, tells Miles that things are meant to happen, are inevitable. And of course, Miles doesn't believe that. Things can change. Things doesn't have are supposed to happen like we think they are. Because if you think about it, it's all random.
Yeah.
I was like, no. This is what's supposed to happen. And of course, Miles sees that his father is supposed to die because of the spot.
Yeah, where a police captain that Spider-Man is very close with will die in a battle with one of his nemesis trying to save a child.
Yeah.
So, adding to that, there's actually one, there is an interview done with the voice actor, I think it was Josh Keaton, who voiced the Spectacular Spider-Man. who also voiced him in several video games in that time period. And he had a very good interpretation of what's going on, why so many people are backing Miguel.
Yeah.
So the idea is that he says, like, look, all these spider people before meeting Miguel have gone through tragedy. They've gone through horrible experiences. They've all lost somebody in close to them in their lives. And here comes someone who tells them, I know it hurts, but there's a greater reason for it. It's like, it's not out of your control. Like, look at what it's done. Like, look at all these other people who have gone through the same thing. That pain was supposed to happen. So it's just like kind of like this mentality of like, can you imagine if someone came up to you and told you one of the most horrific events that happened in your life was like, I know it hurts, but it was supposed to happen. Greater good will come from it.
Yeah, I wouldn't buy it for 2 cents, because if there was a chance I could have prevented something, I would have taken it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the type of mentality that Miles has, you know, when it comes to his father. Because he's like, I could save him. But what's interesting is, the rest of the Spider people, they want to stop him because they are still in belief that this is canon. This is a canon event.
No, because they're in belief that if by saving this one person, everyone dies. And, you know, because Miguel's been through hard times. It's one of those situations, like, they fully believe they're doing the right thing. Like, they fully believe what's going on. It's like, look, Miles is just a kid. He doesn't fucking know any better. Like, we're trying to protect him from himself. By doing this, he's not going to just, he's not going to save his dad. He's going to kill everyone.
Yeah.
That's what they're trying to do. And that's why these spiders are not bad people. It's just like, where I'm fairly certain Miguel is wrong about what's causing these events.
I agree.
Yeah. But then again, as an audience, we haven't seen all this shit happen. We don't know what's causing these incursions. It's just one guesstimate.
Yeah.
But then the other thing is, like I was mentioning earlier, they basically call Miles an anomaly, saying that if he didn't exist, if he didn't get bitten by that spider, then the Spider-Man of that reality wouldn't have died, and none of this bullshit would have happened.
Now, I wouldn't put that blame on Miles for that.
Yeah. It's not his fault. He's not the one who summoned the spider into his reality.
No.
But the other thing is, I'm also sure we're going to find out that that is wrong. Because, like, it's like, oh, if you weren't there, then Peter Parker wouldn't have wasted time trying to save you, and then he would have stopped the collider, and then none of this would have happened. Like, looking back and thinking that's true is, like, heart-wrenching. Like, and I'm certain we're going to find out in the next movie that was never the case.
Yeah, that was always meant to happen.
Yeah. What I think, this is my theory, I think Miles, rather than being an anomaly, he's a corrective measure.
I agree.
In the sense that Peter Parker was always going to fail. Like, that was always going to end horribly, and then the Kingpin would have continued his collider experiments, and things would have been even worse.
He would have destroyed that entire world.
Because, look at it, even with all the other spiders, they wouldn't have stopped him.
No.
But Miles being there and being a unifying front, and having these spiders come in to train him and teach him, is what stopped it. So what I believe is that, okay, we're talking about the greater will of the multiverse. I think that spider was taken out of another reality, one who was another Miles, because it needed Miles to be Spider-Man in this reality to correct what was going on.
Yeah, of course, Miguel and the other Spider people don't believe this.
Yeah. And the other thing is, you also have to remember the influence that Miles and that trip had on the others. Like, yeah. It did allow Gwen to open up to people again. It allowed Peter Parker to make amends and have a family. And who knows what effect it had on Penny, noir and ham.
Probably quite a lot.
Yeah. Well, it introduced noir to color.
Yes.
I don't know what this thing is. I'm gonna figure it out.
Yeah.
There's actually a deleted scene where like they're finding the collider, and like Noir's looking at a painting. It's like, yes, it's amazing use of the color purple. It's like, that's blue, buddy. He's not too good with colors.
Well, he just sees things in black and white.
Yeah.
There was a good line from the new movie where he's confronting Miguel on the train, which, by the way, is a spectacular, sequence. But he's like, everyone keeps telling me how my story's supposed to go. Nah, I'm gonna be me. I'm gonna do me.
Yeah. And then I love another thing is like at the end of the movie, that scene, so like obviously we're in spoiler territories.
Yeah.
And I 100% knew this was going to happen. When we saw that machine that sends you to your home reality, I'm like, we're gonna go to the reality where that spider was from, aren't we?
Yeah, I kind of figured that would die, but just seeing there was not he was not home was like, yeah, this guy converted.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, in this reality, since he didn't become Spider-Man, he became the Prowler. I also feel like I don't think this guy would. We need to see more of this character. We don't know enough. But I love the scene at the end where it's basically a mirror of what happened between him and Peter Parker, where like Peter was tied to the thing and he's like, lesson one, don't look at the mouth, look at the hands.
Yeah.
And I know it's very silly, but I always love it when you see Miles use stuff he's learned from Peter Parker.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just like there's something like, you know what? Like Peter's a bit of a fuck up, but he did teach the kid well.
He most certainly did.
And I just love that line. It's like, ah, go easy on him, Miguel. He had a terrible teacher. The kid never stood a chance.
Any, he owned up to it. He owned it.
Yeah, but the thing is, he was actually not a bad teacher. He taught him well. And like seeing like Mayday show up, and that's what I was getting at, is that I feel as the movie's gonna go on, they'll probably check Mayday as an anomaly too, or like that's what Miguel will call her, an anomaly in the waiting.
Yeah. And what do you think Peter B is going to do about that? Because that's his daughter. If Miguel tries anything against his daughter, Peter's going to fight back.
Oh, 100. Well, that's what he's kind of doing now.
Yeah.
Like, Miles is not his kid, but like. And we also got to talk about, we haven't mentioned him at all, but we got to talk about one of the MVPs of this movie.
Yeah.
You know who I'm about to mention?
Ahead.
Spider-Punk.
Yes. He was such a badass. I want to see more of this guy.
Hobie Brown's Spider-Punk is like. Look, in the comics, I feel he never had his own run. He was always a side character in the Spider-Verse events. But here, man, they really brought him to life.
Yeah. And he was like, I'm out of here. I don't want to be like this. I don't want to be part of this group.
Record, I quit.
Yeah, and he's helping Miles, and he's helping Gwen, as well.
Yeah. Well, the way I always saw it is that Hobie was never really part of the society. He was more like, yeah, I need to figure out how this shit works. This shit's whack. I'm waiting for the right time to interfere.
Yeah.
And the thing I love about him is like, and this was really good writing. You think they're gonna introduce him as for a love triangle or a romantic foil. What happens as soon as he shows up? All he does is support Miles.
Yeah.
Like he is not a romantic foil. He's the cool older brother.
Absolutely, and encouraging.
Yeah. And there was this one scene with him where like Miles is trapped in the bubble, and Hobie like shows, he reminds him, use your palms, like put all your hand into it. And like, because he's there to help him. He's there, it's like, No, dude, this is good. Like, it's like, Hobie, you're not helping. Good. And his art style, everything about him, and because me and my friend, we noticed this after the movie, is that in that scene where they're going to go see Miguel, he's doing nothing but like swiping things. He's being all fucking kleptomaniac. That was so he can build his own watch.
I think he kind of foresaw what was going to happen.
Yeah, the guy was playing 4D chess.
Yeah.
And like that scene at the end of the movie where it's like, this is going to be one of the most haunting cliffhangers for the longest time.
Because first of all, before we get to the cliffhanger, Miles pretty much was betrayed by everybody, specifically Gwen, and he feels very hurt about that, and we feel is hurt, especially when he says goodbye to her. You're like, I'm done with you.
Yeah, but I don't feel that Peter and Gwen ever fully betrayed them because all they did was just try to talk to him. And if you notice, they're never trying to stop him. And like Peter even breaks off from everybody. It's like, I just want to talk, man.
He's trying there he's trying to be helpful, but of course Miles is not hearing it
Yeah.
because this is his age. He's 16, you know.
So, but
I
I
guess,
feel like in the next movie, like, you know, things will be better for them.
yeah, I think so. Because our spider people, Gwen, Peter B, Spider-Noir, Spider-Ham.
And now you could also add Punk in India to the mix.
Yes. They're gonna help Miles and try to find him.
Oh, yeah. And I love that. I know it's silly, but that I love that ending. That scene where like Gwen's talking about like you know finding her band, finding her people, and it starts off with like all the new characters we met, and then it pans out and we see the OG team, Noir, Ham, and Spider. And like, oh my, okay, the internet has been going crazy over Penny Parker, because I don't know if you ever read the books where she's from, the Mech Spider.
No, I actually haven't.
So for those who don't know, her universe is based on Evangelion. And her canon event is incredibly traumatic. Just for those uninitiated, just mix Venom with an angel. And yeah, that's. Yeah, no, it did not go well. It did not go well. Life is suffering for Parkers.
Oh boy. Yeah.
But I just love seeing those three back. And it's like, I'm a little sad we didn't get any lines from them. But I'm guessing it's because Nicolas Cage and James Mulaney, I think that's the voice of Ham. I forget the voice actor's name. But I think it was just too expensive to get their voices in for like even a one-liner. So more than likely, they're just like, you know what? We're saving them for the third one.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Because I really do want to see Noir and Ham again. Like, those guys were fun.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But yeah, no, like, they're making so much art about, like, Penny's life being suffering. But it's also nicely. I also love the dumb ca cameo of, like, the grocery store from Venom.
Yes.
Oh, and another thing. The entire Lego bit was animated by a 14-year-old.
Get out of here.
Yeah, like the entire Lego part of that movie was animated by like an indie 14-year-old, something like that. That's I read that like, and I'm like, no way, that's pretty cool.
I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense because like you see all this pretty advanced stuff like Lego art-wise, right? So I can pretty much like stop motion and all that because that was 100% stop motion. That wasn't like CG if I remember correctly.
Stop motion.
Yeah, I just love like thanks, Peter. You're one of our best.
I
Like
love it.
the Lego Peter Parker.
I love it.
I can't wait for that movie to come out like on digital release, home release, just so we can be like. picking apart all the different cameos.
Absolutely.
I did see one where it was Annie Parker and Mayday Spinnerets.
Yeah.
Mary Jane Spinnerets. So it's like, oh, okay, so there are universes where he has kids and all that. Yep. And then, like, you had specifically, because I saw a screen cap of it, Ultimate Universe is called 1610.
1610, okay.
Yeah, so that's the, 616 and all that, like the official designation. So there is a character who shows up, and his designation is 1610B. Because, do you remember the Clone Saga in the original Ultimate Universe?
I do.
Yeah, which was actually pretty well done. I liked how they did it.
Yeah, they did.
So one of the characters was called Tarantula, who was another clone of Peter Parker, where they made him with, like, where they really enhanced the spider parts of his DNA and had him have, like, four limbs. So he's, like, wearing a black suit. He has four hands, and he has, like, more spider features in his face. He was one of the characters that went into the Peter parked car.
Okay. When this comes out, I have to rewatch it again because I got to pick these things.
Mm-hmm. So that was funny. And I really, like, I can't wait to go through it and see all the different versions of Spider-Man. Like, when I saw Ben Reilly's...
That was cool.
It's like, first of all, Scarlet Spider was always a really good design. I love that costume.
Yeah.
Like, with the coat and everything. Like, it was always a really cool outfit. It's like, oh, I'm just thinking about my troubled past. And I'm like, let's be honest. This spider person, this is just the 90s personified in one character.
Absolutely.
It's like, it's all like the grim dark stuff they were doing with Spider-Man at the time. That's all in this one character. And like having the comedian play, the guy from Brooklyn Nine-Nine was like a great idea. Because his voice could actually work for Peter Parker, because Peter Parker is funny.
Yes.
And I'm just thinking to myself, like, I love the lines, like, oh, are all of you in position? Yes, Dad. I'm like, you know what? That's really Peter Parker. That's good. And I always love the line. It's like, Miguel, you're so serious, man. Like, lighten up. Spider-Man's supposed to be funny. You're the only Spider-Man who's not funny.
Yeah.
Like, they have such a good dynamic, those two. It's like, it's the funny guy and the straight guy, you know? But I love, and sorry if I'm taking up all the time talking, but I do love how they've made Miles' world, like how he came into his own as Spider-Man. He fought villains. The way he interacts with, like, the people in his universe, like, are those my Jordans? It's just, and I also like having a Spider-Man with a family dynamic.
Yeah, which is something somewhat different.
Yeah. And I'm really hoping in the next movie, his dad finds out he's Spider-Man.
Yeah, just to kind of figure out, okay, this is why you've been so distant. This is why you've been sneaking out.
Yeah. And we didn't even talk about fucking Gwen's universe yet.
My lord, Gwen's universe is quite something.
Visually, it is amazing. Like, it reminds me of the original colors from the cover of the first Spider-Gwen comic.
Yeah.
And it's really beautiful. And the way they use the colors to really accentuate scenes and warmth and all that, I'm just like, yo, this is good. This is really good.
You can get lost in some of these scenes just looking at the backgrounds, because they're just spectacular, especially in Gwen's universe, because the colors, they're very, like I said, very vibrant, and you can just get lost in that universe.
100%. This is why I love animation, and this is why Disney needs to stop making live-action remakes.
Please stop. Yes. Enough already. Stop destroying our childhood.
It's not even about destroying your childhood. It's just that there's certain things that don't develop well in live-action because of how fantastical things are.
No.
Okay, because, like, I don't care about the race swapping or the the, we'll say, like, what people call wokeism in the new movies. It's just that compared to an animated movie with all this exuberant animated stuff and colors going on, you can't replicate that with live action without turning it into a cartoon.
It's impossible.
Yeah. The closest anyone ever came to that was Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, I would say that, yeah.
Yeah. And Scott Pilgrim works in and of itself, it has its problems, but it works. But there's something to be said that some things just work so well in animation. And I'm loving stuff like Spider-Verse because if they keep pushing this envelope, then more and more people will start taking animation seriously for the different kinds of stuff you can do with it, not just like stuff for kids. No, Spider-Verse is showing us that you can do some amazing stuff if you want to be experimental.
Exactly.
Because you know what? These colors, what's going on, it makes you feel. And that's what yeah. And that's why I really hope that Spider-Verse wins some awards because it deserves them.
Yeah, because they really push the envelope even further, which is spectacular. Because this is the thing, folks, and I do this with my own comics. I always want to go bigger and better. Want to push my art style, I want to push my universe. And Peter, you also do the same thing with your series.
Yeah, definitely. You want to go bigger and better, and I'm really hoping that that's what these new movies will do. And I just, from what I'm hearing, apparently the release date of the next movie is next year, but they're also saying that they haven't even started animation yet. So it's,
I don't know.
yeah, it's, we're probably gonna have to wait 3 years for the sequel, and it's gonna fucking kill us.
Yeah.
So that aside, I can't wait for the sequel. I'm saying this again. This is one of the best movies I've seen in a very long time.
100% agree with you on this.
Because I'm gonna make this incredibly quick, but I did a double feature that day. I saw Spider-Verse and I saw the new Transformers movie. So it's like having an amazing meal and then having a piece of bread I found on the floor.
I know I left the Transformers franchise a long time ago, but I heard it was not good.
Let me put it this way. Bumblebee was good. They did it something new with the formula and it worked. It was entertaining. The designs were better. Then they went to Rise of the Beasts, which is just going back to the original formulas and like, what the fuck are you doing? It's like, I saw it because I was a huge Beast Wars fan. I love the Maximals and the Predacons. And I'm just like, you could just remove the Maximals from this movie, and it's the exact same as any other Transformers movie where it's like something big is happening. We need a MacGuffin that's been hidden on Earth all this time. We need to find the MacGuffin. We're gonna fight. Optimus Prime decapitates somebody at the end of the movie.
Is it true that there are hints at a Transformers G.I. Joe crossover?
Yes, blatantly slow.
No, this does not make sense.
It doesn't, but it also does because G.I. Joe and Transformers cross over quite a lot in the comics.
I give up, folks. I give up. This is it, me giving up.
So, going from Marvel onto something else, I just finished watching the season finale. I'm so fucking mad it's a season finale. I thought it was going to be a two-parter of Superman and Lois.
Oh God. Oh God. Oh, what'd you think?
Oh, I'm gonna tell you my thoughts on the season. I think Mannheim was a shitty villain.
Yeah, he seemed like a tool.
Mannheim was a diet Lex Luthor. I don't know what they were trying to do with him, but that was not a 10 episode arc. That was a 2 to 3 parter that it should have been. The cancer storyline, I'm guessing they're trying to tell some very good TV. It was powerful, I'm not gonna lie, in some instances. It's like them dealing with that. That's family drama. That's CW, all right? Let's leave it at that. That's fine. M the Mannheim, Romeo and Juliet bullshit, that went on way too long. I feel they always have to make Superman a little dumb so that the villains can get away with shit. It's like, oh, this villain is stealing something from this computer. Man, Superman saw that. How about I fight this guy while that's happening, where I could just easily use my super speed and destroy that machine so they get nothing? It's
Yeah.
like, you know, that's the one thing I always hate about like comic characters is that there's losing and then there's not letting your opponent win. And for the plot to happen, they have to find a lazy way to explain why the villains win.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, we need confrontation, so Superman's gonna fail, but why is he failing? It makes no sense. And yeah, it's just, it was a lot of dumb. There was a lot of dumb in that, and I thought like this would make sense for a four episode arc, but they just
Stretch.
over.
This is the part of the problem with television writing versus comic writing. You have to try to find some balance to get what you want, but from both worlds. You're saying, okay, I want this type of storyline, but I want it in, I don't want this in the to have the whole arc be about it. I want this to be like a couple episodes. So well, the whole other arc will be mostly about the comic book version of the story. That's what you want. That's what you should do in these type of TV shows, but this is not what they did. Instead, they did what they did.
So when that was over and they brought Lex Luthor back into the fold, okay, Luthor is intro. Jesus Christ, he is terrifying.
And deadly.
Yeah, that is a terrifying Lex Luthor.
Yeah, something we haven't quite seen before.
Yeah.
Yeah, and his confrontation with Lois Lane at the farm, that was scary because we never.
Because, yeah. No, sir, continue. You're saying.
Now, we'd never seen this type of Luthor before, especially confronting Lois Lane, because Lois is pretty much the confronter. But I was like, you know, I'm generally scared now for our Kent family. I'm generally scared. Then when he leaves, he says, tell Superman he's next. I'm just like, what's he got planned? And Bizarro, and sorry folks, there's several spoilers. Him killing Bizarro many times just so he gets stronger and stronger. I was like, this is doomsday. Doomsday.
Now, the thing is, usually, like, this Lex Luthor is an incredibly petty man. He is so petty to the next level. And is, let's be honest, he deserved to be in jail. There was other shit he should have been in jail for. It's just they got him on this. That wasn't technically his fault, but you know goddamn well he belongs to be in there.
You know, he's done some strange stuff during, you know, the many years he's been in Metropolis. You know that.
100%.
Superman.
Oh, definitely.
Day during the public while he's trying to kill Superman? Yeah.
And it's like, I don't care what you say, Lois. I don't ever want to hear from you again. You ever write another article, you're gone. You're gone. It's like, all right, what the fuck, man? She's living in a small town, writing in a local newspaper. Who gives a shit? But he's that goddamn petty.
She's no longer part of the Daily Planet, so why do you care if she's writing some, you know, some new small newspaper in Smallville? Why would you care?
Because he's that fucking petty.
Yeah, and that man, and of course, the inevitable confrontation between him and Superman leads to Doomsday, and to that fight, of course, him telling his son, and of course, John Henry. Don't. Just
Yeah,
don't.
because this is next level dangerous.
Yeah. And I have to tell you, Jordan messed up so many times this season, it was not even funny, especially taking pictures of with the crowd, you know, in the suit. I was like, are you this dumb? Do you realize what's this gonna do to your family?
But that's the thing, he's a 16-year-old. So he's
Yeah.
not thinking straight. Like you can see that with the way he acts around the girl, is like he's not mature. He's not emotionally mature yet. And now he's got a little bit of power and he's like, this type of character is, and I really, really hate to use this word in this situation. This is some very kind of incelish behavior in what we're seeing in a lot of modern day, and some a little bit of toxicness in, I'm not gonna say toxic masculinity, I'm gonna say more, it's like more toxic behavior you're seeing in people who feel that things should go a certain way or how their feelings are. But granted, you know, he got rejected, he's not taking it well, he's hurting, he's internalizing, and he's projecting.
Yeah,
And
that's very normal.
yeah, especially in a 16-year-old, you know, that this is normal stuff. But the good thing is that he has supportive parents to help him through this. Like, look, like Clark is like, look, you've been a real jerk to that girl. I know you're hurting, but do you really have to treat her like that? And like, here's the thing, your powers are a great thing, but there's a difference in between using them for yourself and using them for others. It's not how you use them, it's what you're using them for.
Exactly.
And it's like, it's all a very important lesson, because you saw in the other Earth how Jonathan, I forget their names, is Jonathan and what?
Other than Jordan.
Yeah. When the other brother was the one who had powers, when you saw how that life changed him and altered him and fucked him up, like, that's something that can happen when you don't have the right kind of parents or the right kind of guidance.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you know that these kids have that potential to become bad eggs like that. But it's all about, you know, having the right support structure, the right kind of people in your life to guide you in the right direction, which now we're going to get into a little bit of real talk, which is, I think, might be the problem with a lot of the younger generation sometimes, is that they don't have people to call them out on their bullshit and point them in the right direction.
It's sad, but sure.
Yeah. And you know, one thing I love about this version of Superman is that it's showing us what good family values and what good role models can have as effect on children. Because we're seeing Jordan go down this dark path with wanting the fame and fortune and recognition. And then you have his father pulling him back, saying, no, you need to take a step back and think about why you're doing what you're doing.
Exactly. And Clark is enough, you know, because he had sort of been through this road. He knows exactly what Jordan's going through, especially, you know, finding out all this power and all that. But he also acknowledges the responsibility of, you know, saying, okay, I could have used this for so many, these powers for so many reasons, but I chose to do it the right way, which is to help others. So the fact that Jordan has that type of father helps.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. So overall, the thing that made me the most mad about that final episode being so good in the last few minutes, I thought there was going to be a part two next week, and only then did I find out that this was the goddamn season finale.
Yeah, they're gonna leave this to a whole nother season. I'm like, oh, okay, come on, no, the fight's just getting good. Please don't do
I
this.
know. Like, honestly, I feel like they should have done kind of like what the Flash had been doing for the longest time, where the first half of the season was Manheim and then the second half of the season was the Lex Luthor story.
I know.
Like, that would have worked so much better. But like, I will say, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this is one of the first instances I've seen where Doomsday is basically the a corrupted Bizarro Superman,
Yeah, you're correct.
which in of itself is actually not a terrible idea.
Isn't. It isn't.
Yeah, because it makes sense, because what is a Doomsday but a Kryptonian experiment where it just kept dying over and over again, and you know it has a base Kryptonian ability. I think, like, what was it there in the Justice League animated cartoon? I think Doomsday was a really messed up Superman clone.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. But this one is like, yo, Even Bizarro in this version, Bizarro was not a horrible person, just because like, even when like you saw Clark, it's like, what did they do to you?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's just like it's so horrible. Like when you stop and think about what this version of Superman has been through, it's so horrible. Like he tried saving his world, but was killed in the process because you know he was shit at explaining things, which is another goddamn trope in media. It's like, man, if somebody just actually sat down and explained to other people why this shit was going on, none of this would have happened.
I know, I know.
But I am definitely looking forward to the next season because I think like this Superman and Lois show has been really good so far.
I have thoroughly enjoyed it. It's one of the best Superman shows I've seen in a long time. And I'm very excited to see where the war is going to go, especially after that damn cliffhanger. But this is also a question. Are we at another Death of Superman type of thing?
Yeah. My question is that I'm actually just surprised it got another season because you know with like the CW basically cutting all their DC shows, all the Arrowverse stuff was completely like axed. I'm just like surprised. I thought this was gonna be the last season where they're gonna wrap it up like Stargirl.
I gotta tell you, maybe they'll spend season four wrapping it up.
Well, very possible, but I'm looking forward to it and. You know, I think that's about everything we can cover, but next time there are some stuff I want us to talk about because I would love to talk about more about some Star Trek stuff because
Yes.
I haven't gotten into Strange New Worlds yet. I'll pick it up at some point, but I will 100% watch that crossover episode with Lower Decks.
I know.
And like I did not expect that to happen. It's like, oh wow, we have the Lower Decks cast in live action. This will be interesting.
Yes.
And then like there's just like so many other shows that are coming out right now. Like I know Secret Invasion has started. So I have no idea how good or bad that is. I'm waiting for the thing to finish and I'll just binge it.
Same here.
What else? There's some other really good cartoons that came out. Are you a fan of the Gotti can't say his name. Something Tartakovsky, the guy who made Samurai Jack?
Yes.
He just made a new cartoon.
Really?
Yeah, it's called Unicorn Warriors Eternal.
This is interesting.
So the concept, I'll just tell you the quick concept. It's a team of warriors who are constantly reincarnated via a steampunk automaton to fight this evil, malignant, magical force. And basically, the robot puts the souls of the warriors into new vessels every while. Then they defeat the evil. He takes the souls back, and the vessels go on with their lives. But this is the incarnation where something has gone wrong, and it's actually a really good cartoon. It also has some very rubber hosey art style, and you know it's a style 100%.
Man. Okay, I'll check this out.
Yeah, I'll send you a link to it. And that's been very enjoyable. And you know, there's some other stuff also coming out. I can't wait for like the new seasons of like Invincible, which is always really good. Like I think that's supposed to come out later this year, isn't it?
Is, yeah, it is.
Yeah. And of course, I don't know if you knew about this show. You remember Clone High?
Yes, I do.
It just got a second season that just finished.
Okay, then. I have stuff I have to watch.
Oh, most definitely. But yeah, no, like I one thing I'm glad I'm like a bunch of new stuff is coming out. Movie wise, I think we got all the movies that are worth talking about that came out recently. Like we didn't talk about Guardians 3 yet, but that was really good.
Yes, it
The Transformers can go to the shitter, I don't care. But yeah, no, like I can't wait for the new season of Lower Decks when that comes out too.
absolutely.
All right, so I think this is a good place to end it. So, as always, Ian, it's a pleasure talking.
Always.
Catch up on some cartoons, and then we got some stuff to talk about.
Totally, I will.
All right, take care, man. And as always, you can read all of our stuff on Sierra Nova Comics and other platforms. You can also find me on Amazon. Ian, where could they get your stuff?
You can also find me at Zero Nova Comics. I do have a website, truethreatcomics.com. It's being worked on right now, but I'll let you know as soon as it's up and running.
Awesome. So have a great weekend, man, and to everyone listening. I don't know why you're here, but thanks for being here. Till next time.